The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Well, he just flew in from Australia. He's got a brand new book. It's The Rosie Project. It's a novel. Graham Simsion. Graham, welcome.
Thank you, Mark.
Number one international best-selling author.
Apparently so. Yeah, we've been number one in a few countries now, sometimes for a little while, sometimes for longer. But it's actually turned out to be a real steady seller, which has been great for us, a real word-of-mouth book.
Graham, you haven't really been an author all that long, have you?
Well, not an author of fiction, no. Back in 1994, I wrote a book on database design, if anybody's interested. But no, this is my first novel.
Well, I bet that database book, I mean, you couldn't wait to get to the end of it, see who did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny thing, though, last night, guy turned up to a signing, and he had both books. He had The Rosie Project and Data Modeling Essentials, and got me to sign them both.
Wow, is that still in print?
Yeah, third edition.
Wow, that's something. Now, The Rosie Project, tell me a little bit about this, your protagonist. A little bit of a strange guy, but he's a professor.
What do you mean, but he's a professor? He's a little bit of a strange guy, and he's a professor.
That's true.
Don Tillman is 39 years old. He's a professor of genetics, and he's what we might call socially awkward.
Now, we first meet Don when he... there's a lady that he knows, and her husband, they put him in a nursing home.
That's right.
Because he has some dementia going on. Now, she's not quite his social...
Well, she lives in the same apartment building, yeah. And he's got three friends in the world, and she's one of them.
Not quite as smart, or is he? He's kind of teaching her, isn't he?
Yeah, he's teaching her genetics.
He took her under his wing.
Yeah, absolutely. And he has dinner with her every night, because it's more efficient.
Now, would you say that Don has maybe some autism going on? Because he's into genetics. He does a talk on Asperger's.
Yeah. But his buddy sets him up to give that talk on Asperger's, and his buddy's sort of sending him a little bit of a message. He says, why don't you go and research this stuff, Don, and give my talk on it in my place? You know, you're a professor, you can do it. And Don gives the talk, but he's totally oblivious to any sort of idea that this might apply to him. He's just got these kids in the audience, and he's telling them. But... I decided early on when I was working up the Don character, I wrote a short story. And when I introduced it to the workshop group, I said to them, this is a guy with Asperger's. And not that I'd researched it, but I just figured, in fact, somebody had read it and said, oh, he's obviously got Asperger's. So I said, this is a guy with Asperger's. You know what? All they wanted to talk about was Asperger's. You know, hey, do people with Asperger's drink? Do they wear socks? Do they really go out with girls? And I realized that they couldn't see past the syndrome. They weren't interested in my character. So I thought, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not going to diagnose him. I've met people like this guy. I'm just going to say, here he is. If you want to diagnose him, feel free. About 3 weeks ago, I had lunch with one of the world experts on Asperger's syndrome who's read the book, and he said, Graham, Don has Asperger's.
Wow. Well, that's something. So you didn't really do any research on that condition, or did you?
Well, I spent 30 years working in information technology, so I count that as research on the condition. I mean, the information technology world and the academic world, I think, are full of people, particularly in the sciences, with undiagnosed Asperger's. It wasn't even really a diagnosis in the Western world until in the US and English-speaking world until the 1990s, and then it was for kids. So people my age, I'm in my 50s, people like Don at 39 would have escaped that diagnosis.
You know, I was talking to a lady that's really well known. She is she works in the animal field.
Temple Grandin.
Yes, sir. And I asked her about autism and how come this big basket kept growing and growing. And she said that they're throwing other people in with different conditions and calling it autism. What would you say about that?
Well, I think one of the issues here is that the psychiatrists in particular have decided that it's all autism, if you like. So what we used to call Asperger's is now part of autism. Now, I'm not a scientist in that area. It's not for me to judge. My wife is, in fact, a professor of psychiatry. But what I think it means for my book is that there's a danger. Don Tillman technically has Asperger's, but he competes with us on equal terms. He's smarter than us neurotypicals at some things, and he gets some other things wrong. But we can have a joke about it. We can laugh, and it's appropriate. And he wouldn't want to be any different. He does not consider himself disabled. He's just differently abled, as it were. It's a bit like being Chinese and only speaking Chinese, and you're in the USA. It's going to be difficult for you, but it's not wrong to be Chinese. But if people read the book and they say, well, it's all autism, and I've got a kid who's like Rain Man or something like that, who's very disabled by it, hey, we shouldn't be making a joke of it. And I'm saying very clearly, this is Don Tillman is not everybody with autism. Don Tillman is one guy in one place in the world who's managed to find a job and hold it down and have friends, and that's who he is. And we can now go with that story, but it's not meant to represent everybody who's got autism is on that spectrum.
As you go along in the Rosie Project, and Don, you have to almost laugh a lot because I think...
Almost?
You do.
Yeah, good.
You know, it's laugh out loud funny just because of the ways that he is, but I know people like him too, which is kind of funny.
Well, you know what? That's what everybody says. They say, yeah, it was laugh out loud funny, and that's probably the point of difference of the book. There's not a lot of fiction that's genuinely laugh out loud funny. But then they say, and I know my brother-in-law, my father-in-law, my husband, he's just like Don. And I've had men come up to me and say, I don't get it. I mean, I don't see anything strange about this guy. So, yeah, I think it's that familiarity. Most of us know somebody who may well have Asperger's and be undiagnosed, but it's not causing them pain and grief. They may just not be so good at certain things than others, a little bit tactless from time to time. Yeah.
Well, Don, he has this predicament. He kind of knows that he's not really going to find the woman for him. And then with talking to another lady, I believe she was French, and she was a great catch for just about anybody, but maybe not Don. He came up with this idea of putting together a questionnaire. It seems like it was maybe, what, 5-8 pages?
16, double-sided. Multiple choice, scientifically designed.
Now, that is funny in itself, but, I mean, that's a great way to find somebody that you're kind of compatible with.
And today, it's what a lot of people are doing. You go on the internet, they're going to have to ask some questions about you and what you're looking for. And sure, it's not 16 pages double-sided, but we may be heading that way. And realistically, I think a lot of people have got mental lists. My wife said to me, after we got married, she said, you know, I had a list, a few things that a man had to have. It wasn't very long, but the first item on the list was, must be taller than 5'10". And you're looking at me now, and I'm about 4 inches short of that. So she would have never dated me on the internet.
I think some lists just consist of maybe a job and a car.
Huh? Yeah, that'd be a good start. Clean habits.
The Rosie Project, how did you come up with this idea for Don, for the list, for the book, the idea?
Well, like they say that good stories start out of character. And I've got a good friend who I've known for about 30 years or so, who is quite a lot like Don. Now, I'm not saying he is Don. There's no live Don Tillman out there. They say a character is a third someone you know, a third yourself, and there's a bit of me in him, and a third you make up. So I made up the list, that bit about the list and so forth, but the voice came very much originally from my friend. It's been modified since, but that's the voice I still hear in my head when I think of Don Tillman. And originally the story was going to be a drama, and it just kept morphing and morphing and morphing as I learnt more about writing, and eventually became a comedy. It had the subplot of trying to find this woman's father by surreptitious DNA testing, and I pushed those two ideas together, and there was the Rosie Project.
You know, Graham, I was a little concerned when you came in with that 16 pages of double-side print before you did this interview, just to make sure you wanted to do it. I guess that you're still writing in there, so... I mean, we do have a chance of finishing this interview, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now, the Rosie Project has been optioned for a movie here in the States through Sony Pictures. How about in Australia in your home?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of people in Australia who, because the book has been out for 8 months in Australia and it's become very popular, and a lot of people don't feel too good about the idea that it's not going to be made in Australia. But the reality is, you know, the movie genre is effectively romantic comedy, and Australia doesn't regard itself as being terribly good in that field. We've had a couple of romantic comedies which haven't done well at the box office, and people are very shy of making them in Australia. So it would have been hard to get it made there. And I got a terrific offer from Sony, who are obviously a very good organization to be involved in. And so far, I'm also writing the screenplay, so that's great. I wanted that. And we've been working together, I think, very effectively. I'll be seeing them again next weekend or next Friday. So yeah, that's all going along well. There would have been nice things about making it in Australia, but look, this is not an Australian story. This is a story that could take place anywhere in the world. We've sold the rights now in 40 countries, 35 language translations. And I think that's come out of it being a story that Don Tillman is a character that seems to exist in every society and people relate to it. So it's really nice to take it out in a way that will get it out to the world rather than just be seen as a local, quirky sort of Australian product.
Graham, as you make the screenplay for The Rosie Project, now it's kind of unusual, I think, for an author of a book, of a novel, to go ahead and also write the screenplay. Will the movie that you envision be a lot different from The Rosie Project? Is it going to probably follow true, or what do you envision for that?
Well, it's unusual for the author to do both, although not that unusual. People like John Irving and David Nichols and so forth who do it. But I wrote the screenplay first. So I originally envisaged this as a film, and I originally had it as a screenplay and quite a well-developed screenplay, and then felt I could add something by writing it as a book, particularly Don's inner voice. So at the point that Sony optioned the book, the rights of the book, I had a screenplay in my back pocket. So the screenplay and the book were very closely matched. Now, I think as we do further development of the screenplay, the story will change a little to suit the needs of the screen. But for me, it's about the integrity of the Don character. This is all about Don. I mean, Rosie's a very important character too, but it's about this unusual man's search for connection, and, you know, getting the humor from that, but also getting the heart in it as well. So if we keep that, I'll be very happy. I've made my artistic statement, if you like, with the book in terms of exactly how I wanted to tell that story. Making a film is a collaborative process, and I'm not a control freak about that. Let's all get together and see if we can make something bigger.
So what was the complications, if there were any complications, with writing the screenplay and then turning it into a book? Because that's two different forms of writing.
Yeah, look, story-wise, plot-wise, quite similar, although when I made the decision to write the book in first person, which is absolutely critical, it's, you know, we are telling the story in the book from inside Don's head. Someone said it's like being in Sheldon Cooper's head for 300 pages, and I would say it's a little different, but it's like that. You know, a film is intrinsically, it's a third person thing. You watch it all from the outside. So from a practical point of view, that meant that I couldn't have any scenes that didn't have Don in them, because Don has to see them, or he has to hear about them, and so on. So that affected the organization of it, the plot, a little. In a book, you can be a little more complex, so I added another, there's a bit of a whodunit, you know, who is Rosie's father? So I added a couple more candidates to make it a little more interesting from the reader's point of view. And of course, on the page, I had to put Don's thoughts, which is what the book is all about, and where a lot of the humor comes from. So in the film, you get humor out of performance. That isn't available in the book, but the humor in the book comes largely out of Don's observations. It's like observational comedy. The guy gets up and he says, "What's this about? You know, people have to wear a jacket in a restaurant. What's this about?" And he's kidding. We know that he knows what it's about, but Don doesn't know what it's about. He's your perfect observational comedian.
And that scene there, you know, in the Rosie Project was hilarious. Of course, Don knows a little karate, and he used some martial arts to pretty much get his point across, I guess.
Yeah, but he was very concerned not to hurt anybody.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Graham, tell me a little about Rosie. We've talked about Don all this time. Let's find out who Rosie is.
Well, speaking as sort of a technician, a writer who has to make this thing, creating Rosie was by far the hardest part of the whole issue. And in fact, the original story was called the Clara Project. And Clara wasn't working for me. Clara was the perfect match for Don. She had the same glasses. She was a research physicist. And back in those days, Don was a physicist rather than a geneticist. And they were made for each other, except Don couldn't see it. We were just sitting back as the audience saying, "Come on, guys, you can do it." And I decided that didn't work as well as I wanted. So I threw the whole thing in the trash. I pulled out Don again and one scene that I kept all the way through, and reinvented a love interest for him. And I wanted someone who was everything he didn't want, checked none of the boxes on his 16-page questionnaire, but still had some strange attraction to him. And in the end, there had to be a reason for us wanting to get together that made sense for Don, but it also had to make sense for her. I didn't want it to be just what they call the manic pixie dream girl who's, you know, doesn't have a real personality of her own. She had to have her own needs, her own agenda, and be a strong person. And my wife and I really sat down collaboratively and figured her out. My wife, the psychiatrist. And, you know, I'd almost said she was a technical creation, except that in the end, I realized, looking back, that I had unconsciously channeled a few women I've met in my time. But she's a pretty bulshy, full-on, aggressive, independent sort of woman. But she gets what Don's about.
Don's friend and his wife. I don't understand that relationship too much, because his friend has kind of a project of himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, look, his friend is his coach. He's coaching him with women, but he's a very unreliable type of coach, as happens in these comedies. And Gene's a cheater. Gene has got a project to sleep with women from as many different countries of the world as possible. He's got a world map, and he's sticking pins in the map. And what he claims is he's got an open marriage, and his wife is sort of turning a blind eye to this. And the backstory to that is that they're both cool psychologists, and when they got married, Gene, who's 10 years older and so forth, said, "We're going to have an open marriage, we can handle it." And she said, "Oh yeah, that'll be fun." And as time has gone by, she's gone right off the idea, but she's a little backed into a corner on it. And so she just tries to turn a blind eye, but Gene is going to get his comeuppance. This is not a situation that's going to last forever.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny, because I was listening on the radio today and they were talking about different foods from different areas. And, you know, do you like Greek food? Well, if you've never tried Greek food, how do you know? So, yeah. You know, like women, yeah. You have to try them to figure it out, right?
Well, that's Gene's theory, at least, which is exact opposite to what Don needs, because Don is actually looking for a life partner and Gene's giving him advice on how to find a one night stand. So there's always that clash of directions there. And, of course, Gene enjoys coaching Don, because Don thinks Gene's an expert, and nobody else in the world thinks Gene's an expert.
Graham, you mentioned that you would like to maybe read a little bit out of the Rosie Project, and I know that you picked out something to take that listener to a place maybe they've never been before, and they might want to grasp a hold of the Rosie Project.
You're setting the bar high for me, taking the reader to a place they've never been before. You can get the audio book of this, and it's read by a man called Dan O'Grady, who's also an Australian, so he reads it with an Australian accent, just like mine. But I'll do my best to channel Dan O'Grady for a moment, or to channel Don Tillman. So the lead into this point is that Don has got his questionnaire together, and his buddy Gene has said, "You can't just use the internet, mate. You've got to go out and do some field testing with it. That's a scientific way to do it, Don." So, Don, "My final non-internet option was speed dating, an approach I had not previously tried. The venue was a function room in a hotel. At my insistence, the convener disclosed the actual start time, and I waited in the bar to avoid aimless interaction until then. When I returned, I took the last remaining seat at a long table opposite a person labelled Francis. Age, approximately 50. Body mass index, approximately 28. Not conventionally attractive. The convener rang a bell and my 3 minutes with Francis commenced. I pulled out my questionnaire and scribbled a name on it. There was no time for subtlety under these circumstances. I've sequenced the questions for maximum speed of elimination," I explained. "I believe I can eliminate most women in less than 40 seconds. Then you can choose the topic of discussion for the remaining time." "Then it won't matter," said Francis. "I'll have been eliminated." "Only as a potential partner. We may still be able to have an interesting discussion." "But I'll have been eliminated." I nodded. "Do you smoke?" "Occasionally," she said. I put the questionnaire away. So that's Don. Not the subtlest guy in the world, but he gets the job done.
And the deal breaker, the smoking.
Oh, yeah, no smoking. Absolutely, absolutely deal breaker. Might as well make it first question, because if the answer there is wrong, it's a deal breaker. Rosie, of course, smokes.
Rosie does a lot of things, maybe, that she shouldn't be according to this questionnaire.
Oh, yeah, she smokes, she drinks. Don drinks quite a bit too, but he's hoping that he'll get some improvement for himself from the project by getting a non-drinker. She wears makeup. She can't cook. I mean, there's a whole list of things that make her totally unsuitable.
And Don, he's a little different too. I mean, you've got to like kidney and brain and spleen, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, he loves exotic foods. He likes offal. He likes variety meats, those sorts of things. And which, by the way, is not typical of people with Asperger's syndrome, but I didn't want Don to be typical. Don's Don. Don likes weird foods. And Rosie is sort of a vegetarian. She'll eat, doesn't eat meat, but she'll eat seafood if it's sustainable. And Don thinks this is all rubbish.
The Rosie Project, of course, Graham from Australia. I have heard before that international authors even from different countries, write a little different, whether it's the pace, the tone. Have you found that true with reading maybe books in different countries as opposed to American books?
Yeah, look, not just our use of language. I say we went to the baseball, and you say we went to the baseball game, right? And so the American version has been translated into American. So just with word usage, I mean, the story hasn't changed, and I'm very happy with that. In fact, I'm used to writing for an American market with my technical books. But, yeah, look, there are subtle differences, and the place where I think it worried me most was the humor. Australians have got a very dry sense of humour, and in many ways that's Don's sense of humour. He has no idea that what he's saying. You know, there's a point where he says, for example, in the last few weeks I'd learnt to make cocktails, and I'd learnt to dance, and he said I'd really found both of them very enjoyable, and now I was going to learn about sex, and I was similarly looking forward to that. You know, it's just flat tone. Yeah, that'll be good too, I guess.
That's funny.
Good. I'm glad you find it funny, because as an Australian writing that, you say, well, it's definitely going to be funny to an Australian. Is it going to be funny to an American? And look, so far, the feedback I've had from both Americans and Canadians have been that they find it pretty funny. And the Italians, too. The Italians loved it. So I don't know. It's in Brazil and places like that, and I never hear anything. I just see all these tweets about it, but I can't read them because I don't speak Portuguese.
And you don't know what they're saying in that
book. They can be saying, this is garbage. What is it? It's not funny. Everybody said it. But I gather it's been pretty positive. But it goes out there in these different languages. In Chinese, it's in Taiwanese. It's been published in Taiwan and sort of classical Chinese. And I did a launch there over Skype. And, you know, the questions from the journalists are quite different in each country.
With the Rosie Project, you mentioned, you know, it was tweaked a little bit for the American audience. Did you do that yourself, or did you have an editor to do that? What was that project all about?
Had a U.S. editor who did that, but they ran it past me. And in fact, I picked up a few things that they didn't pick up because you become very acutely conscious when you've written technical papers of certain word usages and so on. But the more popular things like sport, which I wasn't writing about, I pick up that you say sports and I say sport and things like that, little things, but no big deal. But we had a couple words that we had real trouble translating, but other than that, it was fine.
Australia, to me, it doesn't seem like a very big country.
Physically big.
Do you live like on oceanside property, or what's it like in Australia?
I wish. maybe we sell a few more of these books. No. I mean, most Australians live in cities on the coast. That's, you know, it's very like the Canadians all cling to the border. We all cling to the seaboard, but I live a few miles away from the ocean, you know, in a city suburb in Melbourne, in Fitzroy, in Melbourne. So it's a funky sort of area, a little New Yorkish.
I know California, the Pacific, rather cold. I suppose the ocean around Australia also a little chilly, or how does that work?
It varies, because we're in the north. It's the tropics, so it's you've got wet season, dry season, and it's pretty warm. Down you go as far south as Tasmania, which is the island state south, and you can get snow in the middle of summer, so, you know, in the mountains at least. So a lot of variation. Melbourne's got a very temperate climate. It's, I don't know, San Francisco.
Yeah, that'd be great weather. The Rosie Project, of course, your brand-new novel out in hardcover. What's next?
What is next is, the movie,
well, the
of course.
Movie, yes.
The movie is happening, but probably before the movie comes out, the sequel. So I wasn't going to write a sequel, but this is a romantic comedy, and I don't think there should be sequels generally to romantic comedies, you know, Bridget Jones notwithstanding, Bridget Jones included perhaps. Look, well, the trouble with a romantic comedy is if you want the next book to be a romantic comedy, if the people are together, you've got to break them up. If they didn't get together, he's got to find someone else. I'm not going to telegraph the end. It's an awkward place to go because people have fallen for the original person and so on. So the next book will not be a romantic comedy. It will be the next stage of Don Tillman's life. And if people read the book, they'll know whether Rosie is in that or not. And he'll be facing some new challenges. It'll certainly be a comedy. It'll certainly be the same voice, but it won't be about courtship and getting together or not.
If you've ever watched Mr. Bean, Don seems a little bit like Mr. Bean in a sense, except he talks.
Yeah. Look, the comparison that's generally made is Sheldon Cooper in Big Bang Theory. I mean, the message is if you like Big Bang Theory, you'll love the Rosie Project. And because they have a lot of similarities. But I think what's really important is to be able to see, we're talking about Asperger's syndrome, and they never say that Sheldon has Asperger's syndrome either, but much the same reasons, I think. But to say, okay, these guys are very similar, but now let's study them, get to know them well enough that we can see behind that to the differences. And there's a tendency sometimes to say, well, all vision impaired people, if two people walk into a room and they're both vision impaired, you say, oh, wow, two vision impaired people have walked in the room, but one might be a man, one's a woman, one's younger, one's dealing with it better or worse, all those sorts of things. You get past that and start seeing all the other aspects of the personality. And I think we need more characters in fiction like these guys so that we can say some are funny and some are not, all those things.
How about a website? I know somebody might want to go there, find out about the Rosie Project, find out more about the movie that you're producing, the next installment of the Rosie Project. Where can they go?
In the USA, rosieproject.com.
And what are they going to see?
They're going to see, Simon & Schuster, the publishers, maintain that site. So they're going to see stuff about where I am, what's coming up, reviews of the book, all those sorts of things. And I've got my own website, which is Graham Simsion, my name, GraemSimsion.com, which keeps sort of track of my broader life and what's going on, other publications, short stories, whereas obviously the Rosie Project is focused on that book in particular.
All right, out in hardcover, audiobook, The Rosie Project, and perhaps coming to a theater near you. Yeah, Don, you're going to love him. I tell you what, some of the women he isn't going to gravitate to will floor you. You'll go, why, Don, why? But he has a plan. It's called The Rosie Project. Graham, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Mark. Really enjoyed it.
Been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Graham Simsion, author of The Rosie Project. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.